And he fell at his feet and said, upon me, my Lord, upon me, let this iniquity be, and let thy handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thy audience, and hear the words of thy handmaid. And let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thy handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord, whom thou didst send. Now, isn't it something that his wife sees that he is this kind of man? There she said it. She said that he this is the kind of man that he is. He's self-willed. He's arrogant. You know, he's someone that, you know, folly, it says, is with him, she's saying, you know. So anyhow, she's talking to David here in verse 26. Then she says, now therefore, let my Lord, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies and they that speak evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now this blessing which thy handmaid hath brought unto my Lord, let it even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thy handmaid, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Lord, and evil hath not been found in thee all thy days. So she knew David. I can't believe that Nabal didn't know David, but she knew David, at least anyhow. She, in verse 29, yet a man is risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul, but the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord thy God, and the souls of thy enemies. Them shall he cling out as out of the middle of a sling. And it shall come to pass, when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. But when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid. And David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me. And blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou, which hast kept me this day from coming to shed blood, and from avenging myself with my own hand. For in very deed, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, which hath kept me back from hurting thee, except thou hast hasted and come to meet me, surely there hath not been left unto Nabal by the morning light any that pisseth against the wall. So David received of her hand that which she hath brought him, and said unto her, go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to thy voice, and have accepted thy person. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was very merry within him, for he was very drunken. Whereof she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light. But it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became as stone. And it came to pass, about 10 days after, that the Lord smote Nabal, that he died. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be the Lord that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and hath kept his servant from evil, for the Lord hath returned wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. And David sent and communed with Abigail to take her to him to wife. Well, then you know the rest of the account. She becomes his wife, and et cetera, et cetera. But anyhow, you can't, and I was telling Ben about this, you can't touch the hand, you can't put your hand on the man of God. Don't do it. Don't even try it. There's a, you heard us talk a little bit about it. We met this guy down in Allentown there, or in Bethlehem. His name is Angel. And he's on fire for the Lord. And I mean, this man's on fire. And he told us, as a matter of fact, when we met him, he was praying for some other Christians to be with him. And he was so happy and blessed by it. He was standing up there crying. He says, man, oh man, I can't believe it. There's Christians. There's four more Christians here now. There's four of us all together here now. Because he knew Nathan. He talked to Nathan and Chad first, and then they had told him about me too. And then him and I got to talking. And he said, I'm going to talk to you. So we got to talking about some different things. He says, man, I want to tell you. He says, you can't put your hand against God's man. He said, I want to tell you. He said, There were some white hats down here, and they were giving me a hard time. He says, I mean, they were giving me a hard time. He says, I prayed to God. He says, I prayed to him. He says, I even fasted and prayed to God that God would do something to them. He said, to get off of my case and stuff, he said, because they were giving me a hard time because I was a Christian. He said, in 2 weeks' time, those guys were fired. Now, I don't know about you, but I want to tell you what. That boy was excited when that happened. He wasn't expecting that. He was expecting something, but he wasn't expecting that, and those guys were fired. You can't put your hand against God's man, gentlemen. Don't, you know, you can see it right here. David had the hand of God upon him. Nabal wasn't going to put his hand against him. There was no way. The Lord took care of it. He took care of the whole thing here. The same way that he did for this guy named Angel. You know, God took care of it for him. You know, and you know, somebody like out there, you know, kind of gets me going a little bit too, because, you know, talking to somebody and seeing somebody like out there, you know, that you know, he showed me his phone. He was showing me different things. He says, I want proof. He says, when somebody tells me something, I want proof. He says, here's my proof. And he pulled out his phone and he was showing me. He says, God gave me this house. He had a picture of his house. God gave me this BMW, he said. He showed me a picture of his BMW. He had his picture of his car that he drove to work, which was just a junker. But hey, he said, God gave me all this. He said, God gave me my family back. He was in jail for 14 years for selling dope. And he told me all the stuff that he was into, it was unreal. And the Lord saved that man. And I mean, I believe the Lord saved this man. I mean, this guy is on fire. He preaches all the time. He was getting laid off right a couple days after we did down there. And he told me, he says, I'm going over. His wife was from Portugal. And he said, I'm going over to Portugal. He says, I'm going over there preaching. He was taking his time off. He's going preaching. The pastor where he's at, he was preaching. He had different ministries down there. He said he met all kinds of men down there, mayors and everything else, and he gave his testimony to them right there when he met them. I mean, that is something else to talk to somebody like that. When God's hand is on a man, forget it. Don't even bother. And for somebody to be self-willed like Nabal here and going against God's man, forget it. It's not going to happen. Same way in your family. I mean, raising your family. If you're a man of God, the devil, he's not going to get after you. He might try, but forget it. It's not going to happen. You know, it's not going to happen. And like I say, you can see here this Nabal, he was arrogant. He was self-pleasing. He all thought about himself. He even made this meal, he had this big feast and everything, got drunk and all that stuff. It was just thinking about himself. That's it, period. That's all he was doing. He wasn't thinking about David, who was going to be the next king, and his men that was with him, and how David left the land alone, didn't touch nothing that was his there or anything like that. And then all he did was ask him for some food, and he didn't want to do it. So you can see that. So I just wanted to point this out to you and show you someone that's self-willed, that they can be arrogant. They can be these different things, you know, like that there, that they're pleasing to themselves. And things like that. So someone that's self-willed, they just, you know, it doesn't work out in a family situation. It doesn't work out in a church situation. It doesn't work out in the world situation at all, just because of it. Questions or comments on that? Dan, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, didn't Nabal have the right to deny him? Or is it under Jewish law that he, I don't know if Nabal's a Jew or not, but, you know, is there some kind of is there something that legitimizes what David was going to do? Because he was going to draw the sword and kill Nathan and take his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that's stealing.
No, I know. I could see. That's why I pointed out to you there in the beginning here, you know, because I felt that he had a right to say, you know, who is it? If he didn't know. If he didn't know.
Right. Well, even if,
but, you know, I don't know.
Even if he did, you know, it's still Nabal's property.
You're right. Right. Right.
I can't. I mean, there's some legitimacy. I think David's trying to provide for his men, but at the same time, did he have other options, or didn't he? Or, you know, what was the justification for what David was about to do?
Yeah. Ron.
It's been a while, but I remember reading a little bit of commentary about the situation there with David and his men and the shepherds and the flocks. And there seems to have been something that went on in that time frame where men would work as David's men as he did to protect the shepherds and the flocks and everything, and they would be recompensed later for that effort. The thing Nabal didn't do, which David told his men to tell him, was to talk to his men, Nabal, to go to his shepherd and say, you know, see what David and his men did for them. And, of course, they went to his wife and told her, but Nabal never really went to his men to get any confirmation of David's claim for what he did for his shepherds all that time to protect them.
You know, it is a good possibility. You're right about that, what they were saying, you know, about them working. It could have been because he said in verse 15 there, but the men were very good unto us, and we were not hurt. Neither missed we anything as long as we were conversant with them when we were in the fields. So I don't know if they were working with them and helping them out or what, you know, and that is a good possibility. I didn't think about that and I just thought about that verse there then. So it's possible that they were Dan. I'm not sure. I'm just saying that is a good possibility.
Working
together. Yeah, and they didn't take nothing. Because back then in them particular times, the people did work together. You know, I do know that. That was something that they did do. And maybe he didn't, like David said there, we never took nothing, you know. And now all he's asking for is some food, you know, for pay. Yeah, it was a small request, if that's the case, you know, if they were there helping. Because, see, David was running at this particular time and staying away from Saul. And so they were, and these men were with David at this time, you know, to protect him and stuff. This was the men that was with him, protecting him. So maybe they were down here in Mount Carmel at this particular time working and helping them out. I didn't think of that, but that's a good thing. Okay, anybody else? Man, you're looking at me so funny. What are you thinking?
I worked my as you were saying there, I think this Nabal really lived with David's models because the men were working with his people. And it appears earlier somewhere it said something David sent them, he knew that Nabal was prosperous somewhere in there.
Yeah.
He liveth in prosperity. So he knew that Nabal had the wherewithal to take care of what David was asking for. And, you know, so I think Nabal was just being jumped up and prideful and just didn't want to share.
Right, right. Because his wife knew who David was. So if his wife knew, don't tell me, you know, that he didn't know, too. That's the thing that, you know, that was the thing that I thought of as I was reading it, you know. His wife knew who David was, and it didn't take her but as soon as she heard about it. But she was putting stuff together, and she was going to go to David because I think she knew what David was going to do through it. Anybody else? Ben.
Me,
Been there, done that. Go ahead. I understand exactly what you're talking about. I don't know how to answer that correctly. Because I think that's, you know, that's a little bit of that arrogance and stuff coming out in them that do them kind of things. And I think that's that self-will here that we were just talking about, you know, that it's all them and nobody else. And guys like that dare, you know, I mean, if they go through Timothy and Titus both to see just what a leader's supposed to be, they wouldn't do them kind of things. If they took it to heart, anyhow. That's about the best way that I can explain that. Anybody else want to hit it? Go ahead, Ben. No, that's why I say I didn't know how to answer it exactly, so that's why if you caught it, I probably was beating around the bush when that's what I was. So go ahead, Ron. Oh, yeah.
All the opportunities he was given.
Yeah.
So even if we come up against somebody that stands in the pulpit of God and doesn't act the job that Saul did, we still need to respect them. And he's in the pulpit. But how we deal with them personally, I think it's another issue. If you know somebody's not responsible, don't give them anything. I mean, that's a personal relationship. That person and yourself. He's in the pulpit, respect him as a man of God. If he's preaching for God's word, respect him as a man of God. If he needs help in supporting his family and whatever he's doing in his mission, support him because that's what God wants you to do. But he's not really a responsible person to you personally, but I think you need to look at him in that respect.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand what you're saying there, too, you know. About, you know, giving things out. If they're not responsible for it, then don't give it to them. Exactly. If they can't take care of it, take care of your stuff, you know. I mean, it's borrowed. And so, I'm thinking of, who was that was in the Bible here that talks about that guy said that the axe head was borrowed and it fell in a stream? Huh? Elisha? Yeah, remember that? Think about that one. He says, man, this is borrowed. I need to find this. And Elisha took that stick and stuck in the water, you know, and floated to the top, and he got it. So it was, I mean, there was somebody that was responsible, you know. And you can tell people that are responsible and who aren't, you know. And you just there's times where you got to learn to say no. And no means no.
Talking about going against a man of God, but
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do know that, and I was in a circumstance one time when the pastor did expect more than what he expected of anybody else. And, you know, he thought that he was deserving of things that even though his congregation maybe did not even have, he thought he was deserving of it. And I was always after the congregation to supply those things for him, even though they weren't really needs.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of individual.
Mm-hmm.
They're a person just like that.
Yeah.
If they have a need, we should supply that need. And, you know, respect to him in the position that he's in. If he's not responsible, then we don't have that obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you know, no, I'm not going to say it. Okay, anything else?
I think you need to respect that person. That's absolutely right, but I don't know that there would be a problem with how approaching the man, not in an attitude of the heart of attacking him, but in an attitude of the heart of trying to make things do something wrong in him, bring that real food in and say,
well, just like you're saying there, you know, don't put nothing to this. Just, you know, because I still respect the person that I did this to this day. But I had loaned something out of mine to someone, Christian, et cetera, and don't even try to put anything together, anybody, because you don't know who it is or anything like that. But it ended up being that it cost me $4,000 when I got it back. But to this day, I respect the person. But I won't do it again, you know. And I will respect them as long as I live. But I will not give anything else out. So you see my point there. Go ahead.
I don't know.
I don't know what to say. You know, it was something simple that all you have to do is pull an oil stick out and check the oil. You know, that was something easy. And they didn't do it and ran it without oil. And it cost me a motor. It cost me $4,000. So I don't, you know, I didn't say nothing. I just bit my tongue. I didn't say nothing. I spent the $4,000 and fixed it. And that was it. But yeah, maybe it is something where you should say something. I don't know, you know. But like I said, to honest, this day I have no hard feelings, and I have respect for the person. I do, but I just can't loan him nothing anymore. Go ahead.
Has the person
harassed
you or anything else?
No.
So you haven't had it?
No.
I'm looking at it from the other perspective. If I borrowed somebody's stuff and if I didn't respect it the way that I should have, if it was an ignorance, I would want to know that. I would want somebody to say, hey now, you borrowed my thing, this is what happened to it. Whether they're going to forgive me or not, whatever is their business, but I would want to know that I was in the wrong. And so that's how I would look at it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even get upset about it or anything. You know, it's just that it kind of put me down for a while for the machine that it was and stuff, that I needed it. But like I say, I fixed it and that was it. I have no problems with it today. But and it's like Nancy asked me there, but if he does come and ask me to use something else, I have to say no. So, okay. Let's try one more here. We'll get started on it anyhow. Okay, the next thing here is that he says in Titus chapter 1, verse, I think it's in verse 7, that he must not be soon angry. And we talked about anger before here, but he must not soon be angry. Let's read some verses first of all. Dan, Proverbs 14, 17. Corby, Proverbs 15, 18. Van, Proverbs 16, 32. And Danny, Ecclesiastes 7, 9. Proverbs 15:18.
A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he that is slow to anger is peace of strife.
Proverbs 16:32.
He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh the spirit.
Ecclesiastes 7:9. Slow to anger. Gentlemen, raising your children, slow to anger. Why do you think people tell you, a lot of people tell you, you know, they got their weird ways of some things, but, you know, there was a big thing going around, it's been a while ago now, and maybe they still do it, I don't know. I heard this thing called time out. Time out. I don't know if you heard that or not. Why were they saying that? Why do some people tell you, first of all, if the child has done something, send them to the room and then let them think about it while you think about it? That is to, so you're not getting angry right away. Now, these were things that I did wrong, okay? And I'm not afraid to admit it. That's why I'm trying to, you know, that's why when I do get into the children's thing, I'm going to teach you. You know, that this is the right thing to do if you're going to correct and things like that there. We're not to be angry. I thought of an incident. My son and my daughter, my younger son and my younger daughter, got in trouble with their mother, which they always were getting in trouble with their mother. And she did her thing. She gave them a licking for what they did wrong. Now, my wife kind of heard my younger son saying, as he was either going down the steps or up the steps, "I like when mom gives me a licking because it doesn't hurt." Now, right there is where I would be starting to boil. She heard that and she called him back down. Now, I don't know how her wrath was at that particular time, but I know my wife, so I kind of think that it probably was starting to boil a little bit. Then he got it. I guess he didn't say nothing after that. So I'm just telling you, you know, you think about that. How would you react if you heard one of your children say, "Oh, that didn't really hurt. You know, Dad just kind of left off there a little bit. Or Mom, she didn't hardly hit me too much there, you know." If you heard that, how would be your anger? Would it be slow to wrath? It wouldn't be for me. I know that. But the kids knew it when we give them lickings. There was no doubt about it, you know. And I'm not afraid to say that we give our kids lickings. And I know all you guys that's in here, I'm positive that all of you did the same thing, you know. But there was times, you got to admit yourself, that you older ones especially, we did it out of anger. And I did. We've done it out, and I'm sure some of you younger ones have done it out of anger too already. And we need to be slow to anger, you know, when we're doing that. All anger is not forbidden. The Puritan Thomas Taylor notes, "It is a sin not to be angry at sin. But if you can't govern your temper, you can't govern your family." What does the Bible forbid? Let's see, Ron, would you go to James 1, 19 to 20? Ben, can you read?
Sure, I can read.
Okay, Ephesians 4:26 and Gary, Colossians 3:8, and then we'll stop here. What does the Bible forbid? Anger which rises too quickly. James 1:19 and 20. That's okay.
Okay, James 1:19-20. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of a man worketh not the righteousness of God.
Swift, what was the first one? Swift to hear. Swift to hear. Listen. And then I think the next one was something about the tongue. Hold the tongue, okay? And slow to wrath. So, you know, anger that rises too quickly, we need to step it down a notch. So we do. The next one here is anger which smoldereth too long. Ephesians 4:26. Anger that smoldereth too long. Did you ever just dwell upon something and you got madder and madder and madder? It's no good. Dan, I'm telling you, there's been many times where I've dreamed how I could just blow this government up down here. I'm telling you, and the more I thought about it, the angrier I got. Just because of, yeah, you know, anger that smolders too long. You know, if you dwell upon it, it just gets worse and worse. And we're not supposed to do it. And then anger which burns too hot, Colossians 3:8. You're to put it off. That's what he says there. Put it off. You know, you got to. You always hurt someone that you love. Are you irritable with your wife and children? Don't take your pressures and frustrations out on your family. Don't treat your loved ones like they were your enemies. So it's something to think about. You know, when getting angry on different situations with the children or whatever. You know, you have a bad day at work. Don't bring it home to the family. You know, that's one thing that I tried not to do was bring that home to my family and my work. I hope I never did, but I probably did at one point or time, but I tried not to do that because I know that them frustrations, you would take them frustrations out on your family. I've seen too many families that did do that. And so, you know, anger. Slow to anger. We're not must not soon be to anger. Questions or comments on that, and then we're going to quit. Go ahead. Yep, that's true. You know, a lot of times, you know, we're trying to get stuff going the way we want it to go all the time, especially when they spit up on you, Corb. Oh, yeah. It just seems, I mean, you're trying to raise your family, you're trying to do this, you're trying to do that, and it just sometimes you blow up. That's just what happens. You do it. This is one of the things that I want, and that's good, Nancy. Thanks for bringing that up. This is something that I want you older ones to think about, especially when we start to go through with the children stuff. Don't be afraid to bring out your faults. I'm going to tell you my faults. I want these younger ones, they're asking, how can they do it right? Where you did it wrong, you know, maybe they can do it right. So don't be afraid to bring it out, you know, because it's something that's something that I want you to do if you want to. You don't have to, but I think it's something that will help them out, you know, for bringing up their children right. Anyhow, because we all have faults, So, okay, we're going to stop right there if there's nothing else.